5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Movies, seconds. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Money for nothing. Chicks for free. Money for nothing.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room, episode 305 on 30th of March, which means it's almost April, and Easter stroke Passover next week, so next weekend, so... happy that to all concerned. And yeah, again, love that song. It takes you right back to the 80s when I think literally everybody on the planet had that album, and I still do, actually. So it's an oldie but goodie, I think, as they say in radio land. But speaking of oldies and goodies,
we'll be right back.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's late and I'm tired, and you know, getting up early. I don't know how you do it all the time, because I feel like, you know, I crawl in bed right now and I think you were still working like 3 hours or something before I even woke up, and it was still just way too early. I got up at 8:30 this morning. Can you believe it?
Ooh, shock horror. I've been up. Oh gosh, yeah. I've been up way before that. Yeah.
Oh,
well, I mean, certainly at the moment I have to get my daughter to school, so I'm up for that. But
It's awful. It's been
a week. I'll tell you what, it's funny. When everybody's been raving about the new John Wick movie, I've seen the others and they got sort of progressively more repetitive. But everybody's, it's brilliant, you know. So I went to see it, and for fuck's sake, it was like it was honestly like watching someone playing a video game.
Oh no! Yeah,
even down to, it was just. Fight scene after there's about four lines of dialogue in it. the plot really, there really wasn't one. It was just. To be fair, the fight scenes were beautiful. It was like watching a ballet.
Yeah.
It was brilliantly choreographed. But it was just one of these where, you know, they get really, you know, like a boot in the face, and then they're back up and fighting without even, you know. Not even a bloody nose or anything. It's just like, this is just not.
Yeah.
You know, funny, old Keanu's there running. I think he's got a magic suit on or something, but he's sort of.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guys get hit by a car and they're dead, you know, but he bounces up, gets up, brushes himself off. It's like, seriously?
Yeah.
And it's just, it was just relentless. It really was. It was relentless.
I don't know if I can. I've seen two of the movies, and I thought they were okay.
The first one was very, very good. The first one was excellent.
Yeah.
The second one was okay. Third one was a bit...
Yeah.
Fourth one... pushing it a little bit for me.
They call it like a book hangover but it's not a book. So I guess a show hangover for a while there. We finished The Last of Us not too long ago, and it was so good. Like, I don't know what to do with myself now that I've done with
it.
And that was
really good, yeah. Well, there's a new season. There's a new season going to be on its way,
That's going to be a while, though, isn't it? But anyway, last year I read a book called Daisy Jones and the Six, and they just came out with a show, I think it was on Amazon Prime or something, I don't know. But I binge-watched this show, and I finished that last weekend, and it was good. It was not as good as the book, which, of course, rarely ever is. But I still liked it a whole lot. And so, like, that's two shows I've just finished and were so good. And now I'm like, I don't know what to do with myself now.
I'll tell you a good one.
I really don't know.
Season two of Yellow Jackets just started. That is a good one. You'll love that.
Yeah.
There's the new season. In fact, funny enough, actually, the season four of What We Do in the Shadows. I only found out, but it's been out since back end of last year. Paul Kane posted something on his Facebook. He said, he's going to, settle down and watch season four of that. What, season four's out? Wow! And I've been watching. And it's one of the, it's so good I have to ration myself. Otherwise, I just binge it. I'd have binged it all in one day and then be sad. Because, I'm going to wait till season five now. But definitely Yellow Jackets is good. Have you ever seen What We Do in the Shadows?
No, I don't even know what that's about.
Oh,
no,
you've got to watch it.
Yeah.
Got to watch it. It is brilliant. It's yeah. kind of a dark comedy. It's a sort of a mockumentary yeah. about a group of vampires living in Staten Island. But it is really good. Right. I mean, it is yeah. just so funny. They're all just dreadful people. you know, but funny with it, you know, it's great,
right.
you know, but I would recommend that. I think what else I've been watching. Oh, yeah, there's a new season of Naked and Afraid, nude and rude, as we call
it.
Oh,
my gosh. I can't believe that show's still going on.
It's great.
I thought years ago, really.
Yeah,
I had no idea it was still going on.
I'm thinking like season 13 or something like that now, and
wow.
it's great. You know, I enjoy it, and it's not for the nudity because you don't actually see anything. But I like the dynamic. It's funny, the one I'm watching now, they started off with two guys and a girl, and one of the guys tapped out literally on like day four, so he was just a nasty boy.
Wow.
And then leaving this guy and this other guy, and they're just not getting on. I mean, he's a bit of a know-it-all dick, and you know she's very hard-nosed survivalist and that, and they're clashing now. About halfway through it, before I fell asleep last night, and they're always better
yeah,
when they fall out. They're always
yeah,
better when there's tension.
A great show for like you know I'm tired and I don't want to watch anything heavy. Yeah, I definitely
yeah.
have to. Yeah, I had no idea that show was still going on.
Oh, it is.
Now that I know, yeah, I have
yeah.
to find it now.
It's fun.
Yeah, I apologize. I think my husband had to leave to go get our son from work, and the dogs are just going to bark. So, everybody, those are ex-Tina's dogs. You hear? And
it's all part of the show, folks.
Yeah, if I yell at them, they'll just. They don't care. They'll stop for like, you know, a half a second and then, well, mom's not here. We don't see her. So we just keep barking.
Yeah. You see,
so,
mine don't. And I have more dogs. Certainly I've got, you know, more
yeah.
weight of dogs. I think one of my dogs probably
yeah.
weighs as much as all yours put together.
Unless somebody
came to the door or whatever, you know, I mean, they're all fast asleep, bless them now.
yeah,
oh, they're really good, bless them.
Four
no
ankle biters now. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
we have to get on the show here. My aunt, though, she just bought my the little puppy, the little tiny little chihuahua that's like 5 pounds. She bought him a little shirt that says "Police Canine Unit." It's so cute.
Oh.
You know, he's a tiny little puppy, and he wears a shirt that says he's a canine unit, and it's just every time I see it, it cracks me up. I just think it's adorable. So, yeah, there's that. He's got one shirt that says security. He's a security, you know. I love him.
Absolutely. Yeah, because obviously, well, you never know. You know, somebody, you know, you could trip over him and hurt themselves or something. You know, tread on him, you know. But anywho, I'm assuming, as I do every week, I'm hoping that we've got some sort of show going on.
We do. I am.
So what have we got going on?
Yeah, I'm going to introduce our first guest. She is an international award-winning Amazon best-selling romance author, M.D. LaBelle. Woo!
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey. You know, I always struggle when we have a guest on who's like initials. I mean, what do we call you? Do we call you M? Do we call you D? Do we? Can I call you Margaret?
Call me Mel.
Mel. Not to be fair, not as good as Margaret, but yeah, okay, fair enough.
I, you know, with the fact that she's a romance author and then MD, my brain said Dr. Sexy. What was that from?
I love it.
Yes. Like Dr.
Everybody
Sexy.
Always thinks I'm a guy because it's MD LaBelle.
And then they are pleasantly surprised when they, you know, find out you're a female.
sometimes not.
I say, oh, no.
Oh, man. So where are you calling in from?
I'm Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Michigan. Yeah, I was going to say the little intro song there that James plays for me every week brings a smile to my face. That's what he pictures in his mind when he thinks of Tennessee, which is where I live. And, you know, I used to try to argue and say it's really not like that. But then, you know, when neighbors will catch like a goat on their doorbell camera, I'm like, well, it kind of is, I guess.
Mom, one week she went to great pains to tell me how it is not like that. And then she said, oh, by the way, so I think she said one of the neighbors has got a donkey in the yard. And it's like, well, what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, I drive by it like almost every day. And I love this donkey so much. I asked my husband, why can't I have one? And he says, I can name that one. Like, he will allow me to name somebody else's donkey, but that's it, pretty much as far as I can get. Yeah, but I love him. And sometimes when we let the dogs out the back, we can hear, like, the donkey braying, or isn't that what the noise they make? You can hear in the distance, the donkey just making this, you know, donkey noises, and it's just so sweet.
That is fantastic.
I'm going to have to record it for you, James. We can play it on the show.
Could you? Yeah, we should be. It could be a character on the show. Absolutely.
I can. So, MD, you are here to talk to us about your book series, The Lake, Part 1 through 3. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's a creature feature horror. Basically, I had a dream one night about the book, and it just kind of spawned into this whole big thing. I started with book one, and I wanted it to go somewhere, but it kind of had a life of its own. It just kept going and going and going. So if you want me to, I can read a little bit of it. It's chapter one, A Strike in the Dark. Ironically enough, when the Johnson 6-year-old Beagle Petey disappeared suddenly one hot August summer night, no one noticed, not a single soul. Not even after the sun crested over the tree line and the thick fog had burned off the lake as it did every morning. Or when Petey's half-eaten waterlogged carcass lay partially submerged merely a dozen feet from the sandy shoreline. No one became alarmed at the strangled sounds of high-pitched yelps that he made as a slimy tentacle raised out of the water with barely a splash and then wrapped around his neck tightly to stop his wild barking. As it halted, his alerts to his people, it stopped for a moment to curl a second dark gray tentacle in the air as if it was checking for something before the first quickly dragged poor Petey to his watery grave. The scariest part of it all was the fact that no more than a mile away in her log cabin, home in the middle of the woods, slept Ann Smith, a 15-year-old, with fair skin, curly long blonde hair, and the bluest eyes. They are a strange shade of blue that can only be compared to the pristine waters of the Caribbean with its white sand and its greenish blue water. And it's just the beginning.
Nice. You know what? As soon as you said creature feature, I was like, oh, James is going to have a ball with this one. You know, wow. And you said this was just a dream that you had. I mean, wow. What were you eating before bed that night?
No, I just had the craziest dreams. You have no idea. I have everything from romance dreams to scariest. Everything.
I want the romance dreams. Yeah. Do you ever combine the two or get some romancey, you know, horror things going?
I wrote so it could be anywhere from like 12 and up, but it's got some instances where it's not quite touching on adult, but it basically, for instance, the main character is the mother and she grew up and she had her kid when she was 15, 16 years old. And this man had always looked down upon her that she tried to go out with because of that. And it touches on that where people always look down upon others if they've had kids when they were younger and that and unwedlocked and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of adult, but not. It's got a little bit of romance because there's places where, you know, the detective hits on her all the time kind of thing, you know, stuff like that, but nothing happens.
Nice.
So, yeah. But it's
nice.
My gentlest book, I would say, because everything else, like in my romance novels and things like that, I get a little edgier and go, not quite PG-13, some of them are triple X, I'd say,
wow.
But, you know.
Wow.
I go the whole range of the spectrum of things. I mean, I even do kids' books and things like that. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. But I really like this series because when I was 12, I had had this thing in school where they had what's called a young authors contest. And basically you put in like a short story or whatever. And at that time I was reading a lot of Stephen King, Anne Rice, D.C. Andrews, all those people. And I just absolutely loved horror, and I always will. It's just been my go-to thing that I've always done. And that's why I love writing about horror novels and that, because it's just what I'm attuned to. The romance thing, it's good. Yes, I like doing it, but it's not really my passion. It's more of what pays the bills kind of thing. You know, I mean, everybody loves a good romance novel. Not everybody a good horror, but, you know,
that's very true.
Yeah.
But I feel the same way. Like, you know, growing up, I always gravitated toward the, you know, horror. And who doesn't love to be scared? You know, I mean, there definitely are people out there who don't like it at all. But I've always, you know, just loved that adrenaline you get when you, you know, oh, my gosh. I love being scared. And horror is my first love as well. When I was younger, you know, if somebody said, what do you want to be when you grow up? My answer was, I want to be the next Stephen King. And, you know, I never made it, but that's, you know, but still, you know, horror was always, you know, number one for me. And, like, I was wondering, with you writing so many different genres, would you say that horror was your favorite to write?
Oh, it always is. I think it's because you can be the most creative with romance. There's like paranormal romance with werewolf stuff and that, but there's always, the readers always want to have a certain way it's wrote, and I always go out of those bounds, like with my May I Alpha series. I go into different aspects of it, and it always kind of shocks the readers, and some of them like it and some of them don't. You know, because with, like, the Luna's Mate, I did male POV, and there was a lot of people that didn't like that because they wanted the woman's point of view, and it's like,
right.
I'm sorry, but that's the way I wrote the book, and I made it more action in that, so that way guys could actually like the book, too. And I've had plenty of guys say, oh, gee, thank you so much for writing this, because there's not that many people out there that write werewolf novel romance, you know, for guys, and you know it can be enjoyed by both, so it's pretty cool that way. But I know, like I said, I write romance because I do like it in a way, yes, but my definite go-to is horror because I've always loved it, and that's how I won my first award when I was 12 in that young authors thing. I wrote a vampire story. And it's just something, I've always loved vampires and werewolves and all that kind of stuff. They're just really cool. And I have the strangest dreams about that kind of stuff. So it just pops in my head. You know, I get weird.
I was going to say, you know, there's definitely, you know, something to writing, you know, what people are drawn to or what people like. But I think that we also have to be true to ourselves. And sometimes that means writing stuff that, you know, other people don't like or that, you know, they wish you did it different. But, you know, I remember seeing this argument online where, you know, what was it? This is not the same thing, but with the show Game of Thrones, the way that they ended that, everybody was so mad, and we deserve, you know, a better ending, and we want you to rewrite the ending. And I'm like, who are you? You know, I mean, I don't know. I was like, this is the way it ended, and this is, you know, so I mean, whether you liked it or not, it's kind of like in my own writing. I write for me. I mean, and that's probably why I'm not, you know, the next Stephen King. But, you know, I think that we definitely owe it to ourselves to write, you know, what we want to or what our passion is.
Well, I'm just going to weigh in here. I mean, obviously, you know, as publishers, and we do see And you know, certainly in our sort of formative years as Hellbound Books, you know, we used to get, and we still do, you know, submissions, you know, I'm going to be the next Stephen King, I'm going to be the next this, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, look, no, what you need to be is the first you, you know, mm-hmm. quit yeah. trying to be somebody else. And we see, you know, we kind of filter a lot of them, all of them out now. Because we look for originality and we look for that unique, even like, you know, a trope that's been done before, like werewolves. You mentioned werewolves, you know, for years I was looking for a good werewolf story, and we had mm-hmm. them, and then one popped in, the invasive species, which is so wonderfully original and unique. I thought, I read the first few pages, I thought, we've got to have this. Carl, I can't remember his first name. He'll kill me.
Carl Johnson.
When you're a kid, yeah, of course, you know, you emulate your heroes, you know, as kids emulate mm-hmm. the sporting heroes, etc. But I think, you know, if you as you grow up, you know, you've got to find your own voice. So that's a bit of advice to all the writers listening tonight. You know, find your own voice. Don't try to be somebody else, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've definitely had authors on the show who I think are very much more I'm not going to say totally in there for, you know, the money, and because there's not a huge amount unless you're, you know,
Yeah,
Stephen King. Mm. But definitely, I don't sometimes feel that they are as true to, you know, their passion as, you know, they could be. I mean, I write poetry, and we both know, James, that poetry really does not pay the bills. But
it does not, sadly.
And, yeah. I know. But, like, that's my passion. And if I couldn't write it, I don't know what I would do. It's just, I don't think I could force myself to write something that I did not feel.
Well, you write what you are meant to write. You write your passion.
Definitely.
That's great, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with my other hat on as a ghostwriter, I by default, I'm often writing stuff that is not really me, you know. But again, mm-hmm. you got to pay the bills, so
yeah, definitely. So, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm hoping that's not as loud as it is for me right now, my dog. But from your reaction, it's. The boys are home, so the dogs are going crazy. So, what are you working on now, MD?
Actually doing a different kind of romance series. It's about a serial killer.
Romance and serial killer. I like it.
Well, she's got a split personality, too, which is even more interesting. Trying to separate the two personalities sometimes can be a little bit hard. But the part is, she can tell that the other person is coming because she gets a strange sense of it. And what happened was, the reason why she became what she was is, it touches up in the beginning of the book. Basically, she was abused as a child. And mm-hmm. the way that she dealt with it was that her other side came out, the kind of bitchier, more sassy side that would deal with things, a rough and tumble kind of person. And mm-hmm. she came out and she dealt with it. Well, then when she got to be about 10, 12 years old, that side just killed both of her parents, plain and simple. Got rid of the bodies,
wow.
and there you go. That's how she became a serial killer. And so now she goes to bars and looking for love and ends up killing the guys, and then comes the detective who's trying to get her. So he has to go undercover. So
I like
kind of
it.
Interesting. Everybody hears about
like
it does. It's quite interesting, but yeah.
Now, what inspired you to write this? Another dream? I mean, I need to know.
Like
your...
I said, it usually spawns from dreams. There is a couple times where I've seen a picture or something. Like, I'm always making book covers and stuff like that. Because I'll go on Canva, which is a creative app you can go on to make your book covers and stuff like that. And I'm also an artist, so I'll be doing art or something, and it'll just pop in my head out of nowhere. And so automatically I have to write down the blurb, I'll type out the first chapter, and I make the book cover. And if I see a picture of something, sometimes a story will just pop in my head too. It's really weird. I have three things that pop in my head, either from a picture, if I hear a certain music or something like that, a whole story will just pop in my head, and or like the dream.
Wow.
And I've got like 50 books that I typed out the first chapter of and that I got to do in the next year or two. I've already done 36 in a year and a half, so another 50 is no big deal. But
where do you find the time? Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Well, I have four kids still at home, so they're teenagers, luckily, so I don't have to force feed them or anything like that, but let's just say that between them going to school and that, I remember my first year and a half, what had started it all was I had wrote this book from, once again, a dream, and it was actually kind of really weird because the guy that was the main character in my first book, I ended up, the same guy that I married in my second marriage looked a lot like the guy with these blue eyes, and that's why I named it Blue Eyes. And then I met him 2 years later after I wrote the book. It was really weird.
And that's interesting.
The thing is, yeah, it is. It was really weird. And it was this big, long book, so I ended up splitting it into three books in one, and that's what I first put on Amazon. Well, after that, I remember in, like, September of 2021, because I put the books on there in April. Didn't think anything of it. I'd sat, actually, for, like, a year or two before that, and my mom kept pushing me, like, nonstop. She's like, you've got to put this, you got to publish it somehow or something. And I'm like, how the heck am I going to do that? Nobody wants to read my stuff, you know? I mean, come on, really. I honestly didn't think anybody would want to ever read my books, ever. You know, and it wasn't something I had consciously wrote to put on publishing and all this kind of thing. It was just something that popped in my head, and it just kind of went out of control, and it just kept going. It ended up at about 160,000 words by the time I was done. Wow. It was just amazing. And so that's why I said I put it into three books eventually when I published on Amazon and that. But then in September of 2021, I got this real weird email from Good Novel, which is a paid web novel app. And I thought it was really strange because I'm like, well, who the heck are these people? I'd never even heard of paid web novel apps at all. I had no clue. You know, I didn't read that kind of stuff online. If I read something, I just picked up a book and read it kind of thing.
Right.
And I mean, I had Kindle Unlimited, but that was another thing, you know. It wasn't that kind of thing. You didn't read per chapter kind of like they do there. And I remember I thought it was weird, so I kind of asked around for a while, a couple author friends and stuff that I had picked up over time. And they're like, yeah, you've never heard of this kind of stuff? I'm like, not really. I thought it was kind of odd. I thought it was a scam at first. And so for a couple months, I didn't do anything. I just kind of sat on it. And then somebody got back to me again. So I put a couple novels on there. And I got a couple $100 out of it, whatever, you know, and paid a couple bills, said, hey, yay, that's good, you know. And then I talked to my husband, who is my manager, too, and everything. And in February of, like, 2022, we decided, well, you know, why don't you just expand? Because it wasn't really going too far. And, you know, being on one platform, I was never going to make a name for myself or anything. And then I couldn't do horror or anything, really. Because there, it's pretty much romance. They don't really like horror and all that kind of stuff. But then they had a contest once I started spreading out. They call it non-exclusive, where you can go to other platforms and then you can put them on, you know, like Kindle and all that kind of stuff. And I wrote that the paranormal werewolf one that I was talking about, the male POV one. It was called the Luna's Mate, the Alpha King. And that thing went like wildfire. I mean, it's on over 200 paid web novel platforms now. It's on every book online bookstore known to man. I've sold over a million copies of that sucker. I swear. It just went wild because nobody really had heard of a male werewolf romance novel that was just solely in the male point of view. And they really did like it because, like I said, it's got more action in it and everything. And just, it was so different. And I put different aspects of it in there, too, that it wasn't just like every other stinking werewolf novel, because it was getting boring over time, you know? Everybody was complaining about how they were all the same over and over again. And when I wrote it, I didn't even think about that. It's just what popped in my head, and I wrote it down, and sure enough, it just went like wildfire. And next thing I know, everybody was contacting me, you know, well, why don't you do this and that? Why don't you get on here, you know, all this kind of stuff. Please find here and that. And then, you know, I made a name for myself out of one book, and I couldn't believe it. And then they had, like, competitions and stuff on, like, Good Novel, and I started writing more of my horror novels then. And I wrote this one. It was called My Nightmares. And remember my nightmares and my dreams and stuff that I have, the crazy ones? Mm. Well, I put them down in that book. I put them down in that book. Yeah. And some of them are crazy. And they're true, though. Some of them are true events that I've made into fiction books and stories and that, like ghosts and that, because I've had some crazy tales. Weird, weird things that have happened to me in life. So, yeah, I put them down. And that's what happens.
Yeah, the next time you have one of those crazy dreams, and I'm going to need a rundown of everything you ate that day. You know, I'm going to make sure to stay away from those things. So, yeah, I do remember having a crazy dream one time and going, ooh, I'm never going to eat grapes after midnight again, you know. which probably had nothing to do with my dreams, but, it, you know, it could have. So I'm just going to be
definitely
on the safe side.
But, I know.
Yeah, wow, it looks, it's, you know, just hearing everything that you are doing presently makes me tired, and I think I need a nap. And then you have four kids at home, too. Oh, my goodness, I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know how you do it.
Well,
but that's awesome.
Basically, I type super fast for one thing, and then the next is for that first year and a half, I didn't barely eat, sleep, or anything. I just typed nonstop because I knew if I was ever going to make a name for myself, the only way was to push myself and write a whole ton of books so that way I'd be out there. And
that's
so,
true.
Yeah.
We have definitely had authors that, you know, they write one book and think, you know, they're done, and then wonder why nothing ever happens after that. Well, it's, you know, it's about the next one and the next one. And, you know, hopefully eventually, you know, something will pick up and you know, be something amazing. But a lot of times the first one isn't. And but
it's
that's,
a learning experience.
Definitely, yes, definitely. Well, I've had so much fun with you. We are just about out of time for our first segment. You have to promise to come back and see us.
No problem.
Yay!
I can definitely
do that. Before we let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have my own website and my own online bookstore. It's called mdlabelle.com. MD as in Mel. D as in Dorothy, LABELLE.com.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and look for the Lake series by M.D. LaBelle. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you. You guys have a good
night.
Thank
you for joining us. Have a great rest of your evening.
Nice.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
She was so sweet.
That was fantastic. I love the having written a kind of romance werewolf novel myself. From the male point of view, never occurred to me. What a great idea! And it's one of those. Funnily enough, you know, to say I wrote it under a pen name, many, it must be at least 7, maybe 8 years old. It's still selling well after all this time.
I am proud.
People
seem
to like werewolf romance, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
But,
who doesn't?
Exactly. I can see the appeal. I mean, I've always preferred werewolves to
vampires.
You know, because they're just more.
Yeah.
You know, they're sexier. They're more. You know, I suppose animalistic. The more
animalistic. Yes, definitely.
You know, you'd never see a werewolf wearing a sort of a poncy cape and poncing around and oh, I want to drink your blood. No, they just tear your throat out and then cock the leg on you when they've done, which is kind of cool. So anyway, speaking of which, it's time for a break and we will be right back.
Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two.
We are back. And, before we go any further, it would be terribly remiss of me not to mention Hellbound Books' brand new anthology, fresh out today. Our rather imaginatively called Hellbound Books Anthology of Splatterpunk. Hot on the heels of the Hellbound Books book of science fiction anthology, which... I'm kind of liking the theme of naming our anthologies. Though. It's a damn sight easier.
Yeah.
But absolutely brilliant. Everyone's raving about it. Everybody loves the cover, which is just check it out. Phenomenal. Yeah. Two dozen phenomenally gruesome, gory, blood-soaked, splattery stories. One of my favorite anthologies, I have to say, being a big splatterpunk fan, as you know. there's even one by me in there as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I couldn't resist.
Yeah, you do. I do love the cover. I do. I was, I'm not really one to sit down and decide to read Splatterpunk. I'm really not. But here I am sending the cover to my friends because I'm like, oh my God, look how cool this cover is. And they're like, buttoning up their collar. That's real great. Real great, actually.
Seeing the initial reaction from around, the Facebook crowd and the social media crowd another home run for Hellbound Books. That's what I say.
Definitely.
Before this one, my favorite cover actually in a long time was the science fiction anthology one. The artist, she got the brief absolutely spot on. It was very retro. Yes. I don't know Blood and Guts, but it was like an old 50s movie poster, which is exactly what I wanted. I love it. It's just great. I mean, we have some phenomenal artists, I have to say.
I have my shelf that's just, devoted to the Hellbound books, and I'm going to need a bigger shelf soon, but I try to put the newer ones up front, and, especially when the covers are just so amazing, and I'm finding myself now where I have to, put a book over top of another one, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to cover that one up. Oh, I don't want to cover that one up either, and... Yeah, so it's getting
you do
it's
need a bigger shelf,
now.
Obviously.
Yeah, you do.
You need a bigger shelf. So, anywho, it is that time of the evening where we say...
Oh, hey, looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
Hey, everybody.
Hello. How are you?
I thought you weren't there for a second. How are you?
No, I'm good. How are you guys?
Tired, to be honest.
Yeah. Tired is a good word for it. It's been a long week.
Oh, God, yeah. It has.
It was a long week on Tuesday. So now that we're here Thursday.
It was. Yeah. It really was because my little boy had surgery.
Of course. How's he doing? How's he doing? I've seen him on Facebook. He looks like a little trooper.
He is. You would have never known that he had surgery on the second day, but I'd already told everybody he was going to be out a week, so I kind of just let him play hooky because I was mostly afraid I would send him because he's in preschool and, he's nonverbal right now. So I was like, I'm going to send him and they're going to think something's wrong and they're going to send him home, then I'll have to go get him. And I didn't want to mess with all that, so I just kept him home.
It's easier.
He gets to go back to school on Monday, and then I start my part-time job on Monday. So I'm hoping next week isn't as tiring as this week was.
It will be.
Yeah.
But congratulations on the part-time job, though. That's awesome. I mean, if you wanted to get a part-time job. Otherwise, boo, I'm so sad.
Yeah,
so,
boo. I have to say, you know, having obviously speaking to MD, you know, the theme of the evening very much is paying the bills. And obviously that is incredibly important.
You know what? We don't get a whole lot of the people that are, you know, holding up the signs, will work for food. We don't get a whole lot of that in the area that we were in.
Oh,
but
God,
There was a gentleman, to be fair,
a lot of them are me and my family, me and the kids, to be honest.
He's lying. But there was a gentleman last week that I saw, and his sign just said that he needs money for bills. And I'm thinking, same, dude, same. I'm going to, like, stand out there with you. I need money for bills,
yeah,
too.
I mostly got it just to have something to do because the kids are in school the days that they wanted me to work. And since both kids have gone to school, I've gained like 15 pounds, and we can't have that because once I gain, it don't want to come off. So I'm trying to catch it before it gets out of hand. I figured it's a cleaning job. I'll be moving. So I'm hoping it'll take those 15 pounds off.
Is it any easier? Oh, you know what? We could just do this and dab all night long. But what do you have for us this week, Samantha?
Oh, I was literally just telling my husband, like, right before you guys interviewed me, I was like, I've read 37 books this week. I don't know what to review. And he was like, well, just review the one that pops in your head when, you know, they're like, it's your turn. And so I'm going to go with The Eater of Gods by Dan Franklin. I follow him on Facebook, and we've interacted a few times, but I've never read anything by him. So he sent me a signed copy. And the cover is so pretty, and it's a novella. And this story follows a professor named Norman, and he's found this location of a tomb that his wife, Clara, had been wanting to go explore and kind of, like, make history with, but she passed away. So he's gathered up this team. They're going to go inside this tomb, and they're going to, like, do all this exploring. And they don't realize when they get inside this tomb that they're going to get locked inside. And they have, like, all of these booby traps they have to navigate through, and there's some curses in there. And then, you know, there's a bunch of arguing because it's a bunch of people stuck inside of a tight space. But I really wanted to read this story because I like reading about, like, Egyptian stuff. I'm always turning on YouTube and, like, just picking something from Egypt, like the pyramids or the pharaohs or something, and it kind of had all of that in the story. But every time I, like, read something like this or I watch something like this, I really question, like, the bad juju that is occurring to all of these people that are, like, messing around in these tombs. That can't be good. That simply cannot be good. So it was, and I was reading this thinking, like, there's got to be tombs that have, like, these booby traps set up or, like, these curses because the Egyptians took death so serious. So I don't think that I would be in there messing with King Tut or, like, any of them. Let them be. I really liked this story. It had some of King Tut's family in there, but most of it was, like, a fictional, you know, story. I just think, I think it was cool. Some things in there were true. He didn't just create some guy in the middle of somewhere. You know what I mean? It was factual, but it was fictional as well. Because then I wouldn't have been able to get into it. I've been like, who is this guy? Where did you come from?
Nice. How many stars would you give it?
I rated this in my notebook, and I don't remember. I think I gave it a 4 or a 5 star.
Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah. Awesome. I think we had him on the show not too long ago.
He's very nice. I've just not read anything back him until now.
right. But you say you like to stick with the 3.5-4 stars and stuff. So whenever I hear a definite 4, maybe 5, I'm like, wow, it's got to be pretty good then. So that's pretty cool.
Honestly, most of the books I read, I just give a 3 star because if it doesn't make me feel something hugely dramatic, or it doesn't have a bunch of quotes in there that I'm just like highlighting the crap out of, like, to me, it's just a 3 star is a good rating. But I'm pretty sure this one was a 4 or 5 because I was actually highlighting whole passages in this. So
nice.
It definitely left an impression.
Awesome. So real quick before you say goodbye, give us a shout-out again what the book was called and the author.
It's called The Eater of Gods, and it's by Dean Franklin.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Samantha, and good luck next week on your job. You have to come back.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Yes, and let us know how it's going.
I will. I look forward to telling you guys.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye,
have a good one. Bye-bye. Always cheerful. Always cheerful.
She is.
She's exhausting.
She is.
She's really old.
Trying to.
Too happy.
I,
she's too happy.
Yes. Definitely.
I'd like to know her secret.
I'm going to say drugs, but maybe it's alcohol, drugs, I don't know.
Hey, whatever
that
works, you know, whatever gets you through the day, that's my motto.
Yes.
That's my motto. Stir a bit of heroin in some vodka and see how that goes. I'm assuming what happens next? I have no idea.
We have a second guest tonight. I'm very excited. I'm going to just introduce him, and we're going to just have a great time tonight. We have horror writer Mark Streamsland.
Hello!
Hi!
Hey, how you doing?
I'm not tired.
You're not? Oh, show off.
No, I'm calling from California, so I'm 3 hours earlier than you are, so it's only 8:30 out here.
Oh,
yeah,
early evening for you.
Yeah. I never feel so bad for the second guest when they're in California. I'm like, oh, that's not bad at all. It's like, you know, it's 11:30 for me right now, so it's getting late. And when I finally stumble downstairs in a half an hour when we're done, I'm just like, this is all I have. No, actually, usually I'm really pumped up after the show, so it's hard for me to go to sleep. And then, you know, tomorrow when I have to get up, I'm like, oh, my God, make it stop, you know. So, yeah, you just can't win. But, you said you're calling in from California. What's the weather like there now?
I'm calling in between atmospheric rivers. So, you know, we've had 12 atmospheric rivers over the last few months, and we've got some spots in the Sierra Nevada mountains at Lake Tahoe, which is not far from where I am, but about a couple hours from where I am, have had 55 feet of snow. So we've had a lot of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I'm in Tennessee, and we didn't really have a crazy cold winter, but it's not wanting to leave. Like, we'll have a day or two where it's kind of nice out, and then, you know, we're having frost warnings again. And I'm like, oh, just would you make up your mind, you know? I mean,
well, you know, with this being Texas, you know, it was a bit chilly one afternoon, and that was winter done. You know, it's now too bloody hot to go out, so... That's Texas for you.
Yeah, no, we're not looking forward to summer. Last summer we got to some record-breaking temperatures. We had 116 in where we are, so that was pretty uncomfortable. But you know, I mean, it's just what's going on, so you just have to take the weather for what it is and keep going.
We had a day, I think it was last week, where we got in, it was like 78. And, you know, I don't like to sweat. I don't like it when it gets too warm. And, you know, at 78, I was like, it's almost 80 out. And I was just, I was already disgusted. I really was. I'm like, I know, I'm not looking forward to this summer crap either. So,
yeah. Well,
you're
pretty humid in Tennessee, aren't you?
I don't think it's too bad here. Definitely not like I lived in Florida for a while, and that was just miserable. You just walk outside and you feel like you're, you know, you can't even breathe.
Yeah.
It's so awful. So I don't think I think Tennessee's bad.
Yeah. No, that's good.
But,
we lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and it was pretty humid there. So it never got over 100, but it always felt so hot when it was, you know, up there.
Yeah, yikes. So, Mark, you are here to talk to us about your book, In the Scrape, and that's co-written with James Newman. We're trying to get him on the show tonight as well, but he had other – he didn't want to join us. He's like, no, I don't want to join
you. Well, he had day job obligations, so – and different schedule, yeah. So, anyhow, but, yes, this is the second thing that James and I collaborated on. The first one is a book called The Special – which was turned into a movie a couple of years ago. So, you know, that was good for us, a successful thing for us.
Yeah.
And then In the Scrape has been proved to be very popular. A lot of people really like it. And we had it with one publisher who went out of business. And so we just recently got it placed at Cemetery Dance, and they just re-released it back in end of January. And so, yeah, so we're very excited that it's, you know, back available for people to read. So, yeah.
Definitely. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's sometimes people kind of talk about it as a coming of age story and more like a drama. But we definitely approached it as a, you know, as a horror story. We both are horror guys. It's what we do. And so even if it doesn't have, like, you know, obvious kinds of monsters and so forth, we still really felt like that's what we were doing. So this the story is about two brothers, young brothers, you know, preteens, and they are living with their father, who is alcoholic and, you know, abusive, verbally abusive, emotionally abusive. And their mother left them years earlier and moved to California from where they are living back east. And the boys are determined that what they're going to do is get away from their father and go live with their mother in California. So, you know, when we meet them, they're kind of engaged in this, where they're trying to save money or figure out how they can get enough money to maybe get bus tickets or something like that to go to California. This is their plan, and planning to run away from dad. But they know that in order to really escape from dad, that they have to do it in a way where he can't come after them right away. And so he's going to take them deer hunting as he does. And they have a plan to tie him up, basically incapacitate him when they go to their deer hunting camp, and this will give them a few days head start on their journey to California. So, you know, they're planning all of this kind of stuff, and then, of course, things don't go exactly as planned, but that's what the story is about. So, yeah, that's the basic start of it anyhow.
Awesome. I want to hear more. And I think that, well, we do. We have a clip to play that's actually brought to us by Mark Harrietta of Harrietta Over Voiceovers. And we are a huge fan of Mark, so I'm excited.
Yeah, we are.
Do you need to set it up, Mark, the clip at all?
No, it's the opening of the book. So it's page one, chapter one. So it's a great place to start.
Oh, fantastic. Right, I'm going to press the button, and I'm looking forward to this.
In the Scrappy by Mark Steensland and James Newman. Chapter 1. 6 days before our lives were turned upside down out there in the woods, when we finally stopped talking about running away and finally did it for real, I lay in bed beside my brother and scolded him for the umpteenth time. I told you to stop doing that. Sometimes I think they switched babies at the hospital, and Mom brought home some psycho's brat instead. I'm just kissing your picture, Matthew said. His breath smelled like the SpaghettiOs we had eaten for dinner. What's so wrong with that? It's weird. He feigned a hurt expression, but he knew I was only joking. Although I acted as if everything he did irked me to no end, there's not a lot I wouldn't have done back then to make my little brother happy. By the orange glow of the Wolfman nightlight plugged into the wall between our beds, stared at the photo together. Our mother looked so happy in that dog-eared Polaroid. She stood in front of a green car. She wore a blue dress that was stretched tight against her belly. She had been pregnant with Matthew when the picture was taken. Her dark hair was tied up in a tight little bun. Her smile was as bright as the sun. I miss her so bad, Jake. I know, I said. We all do. I still wish you wouldn't do that. Dad does it. He slobbers all over the one on top of the TV. When he's drunk, I said. Are you drunk? Of course not, Matthew giggled. I shot a glance through the open doorway, out into the hall where a bluish light flickered on the wall. I heard the canned laughter of a studio audience, followed by a low cough. A floorboard creaked. I didn't have to tell him to keep his voice down. He snuggled up closer to me and whispered, I'm never drinking that stuff. I'd rather eat poop. Like I said, you are so weird. I was 13 years old on the night in question. Matthew had turned 9 the week before. And while I didn't fully understand such matters when I was a kid, I remember wishing he would feel that way forever about finding solace at the bottom of a bottle. He didn't turn out exactly like our father, thank God. But there's a lot more of Kurt Bratterson in both of us than I care to admit. A guy can't help what's in his blood. I sat up on one elbow, took the photo from his hand. As much as we loved looking at it, we never kept it out for very long. This made it feel sacred somehow. Once Matthew started giving it smooches, it was time to put Mom back in the box. Still, I took my turn to stare at it, trying to remember more about her. I was 8 the last time I had seen my mother. My memories of her were like trying to view a loved one through eyes wrapped with gauze in the wake of a terrible accident. I couldn't imagine what it was like for poor Matthew.
Jake, are you crying?
Boys don't cry, butthead, I sniffled, wiped my eyes on the sleeve of my Scooby-Doo pajamas. I was convinced that I had long ago outgrown such silliness, but the PJs were warm, and there's a ton of truth to that old cliche, beggars can't be choosers. The Scooby-Doos had been in a bag of hand-me-downs some local folks had donated to our family the previous Christmas. It could have been worse. I was pretty sure the ones Matthew wore, red with yellow stars all over them, were made for a girl. I slid Mom's photo back into the shoebox between us. There wasn't much there besides our beloved Polaroid. Some pencils, a notepad, a box of Snappin' Pops, a miniature Bowie knife in a black canvas sheath, and 2 old Star Wars figures, an R2-D2 and a headless 3PO. Most of the box was a place where we could hide the money we had been saving. It wasn't for shiny new bicycles, the latest remote control gadget, or trendy tennis shoes endorsed by our favorite athlete. Our secret stash was for something much more important. I pushed aside the stack of bills, removed the notepad and a pencil from the box. Matthew sucked his thumb as he watched me. It was a habit of his that I hated, but I never mentioned it. Dad berated him for it enough for the both of us. Matthew would still be sucking his thumb during his first year of middle school. It only went away after he started seeing a therapist. Okay, I said. I got $5 from Miss Gossett for walking her dog yesterday. 10 for raking the Hoffles' backyard. I scribbled some notes on the pad. Brings us to $135, which means we've got a week to come up with almost $300. Shit. You shouldn't cuss, Matthew said. It's not Christian. I ignored him, chewed on the end of my pencil as I thought aloud. That's just for bus tickets. Can't see any way around it. We're going to have to do something drastic. Jacob, you better not be thinking what I think you're thinking. If it's what I think you think I'm thinking, it's our only option. I told you before, Squirt, we might not have a choice. We're running out of time. But that's stealing. Grandpa left those books to us. He left them to Dad, you mean. So he could sell them one day and we could go to college. I don't even know if I want to go to college. But what if he catches us? We'll be in so much trouble. Matthew, do you want to go to California to live with Mom or not? He nodded. Okay, then. Sometimes a man's got to do what a man's got to do. We heard heavy footsteps approaching down the hallway then. I shoved everything back into the box, threw it under the bed. Our heads hit the pillow at the same time. I pulled the covers up, wrapped one arm around Matthew, and lay as still as a corpse a second before Dad's bulk darkened the doorway. My brother pretended to snore. It wasn't the least bit convincing.
Matthew, what are you doing in Jake's bed?
Dad said. He had a bad dream, I said.
Didn't ask you.
I had a bad dream,
Matthew said. Dad took a step into the room. I smelled sweat beneath cheap cologne, but no alcohol. Earlier that evening, he had attended a dinner honoring local small business owners, and he had wanted to impress. Plus, tomorrow was Sunday. The night was still young, however, and our father was never one to worry too much about going to church with a hangover. He was scared, Dad, I said. I know you got in late. I didn't want him to bother you. It's my fault. Please don't be mad at him. Dad said,
In your own bed, Matthew, now. You're too old for this nonsense.
Yes, sir.
Matthew hurried across the room like someone caught in a tornado, trying to make it to the cellar before the funnel cloud devoured everything in its path. He jumped into his bed.
And what did I tell you about sucking your thumb? You little baby?
No, sir.
Then stop it. I'm going to start busting your butt every time I see that.
How did it go? I said.
How did what go? Dad said.
Your dinner.
Too highfalutin for me. If I had known it was a suit and tie affair, I would have skipped it.
Dad left the room, closing the door behind him. Matthew waited until his footsteps had faded into the distance before he whispered,
Do you really think the books are worth that much? That's what Grandpa said. I hope he was right. Me too, I said. If not, I'll figure something out. I know you will, he said. You always do.
Oh. I really enjoyed that.
I know. Was into that. That was brilliant. Brilliant.
Yes, and again, that was Mark Harrietta with Harrietta Voiceovers. And if you are looking for a narrator, you know, he does great work.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that was fantastic.
That was great, Mark. When you go to make the signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
Don't encourage you. It's just shameless. So, Mark, I have a question. It sort of intrigues me. Obviously, co-writing with another writer. I mean, how does that work? How do you do that?
In my case, it's kind of a unique situation because I've done co-writing or have co-written a number of titles over the last couple of years, and part of what we're doing is we're writing things that are, I mean, this is a novella, so it's meant to be very contained. It's not a gigantic novel that's kind of sprawling over a lot of stuff. And it's because, you know, like I said, we're looking to the movies to get things adapted and made into movies as well. And so we have screenplays for all of these things as well. And that's part of our process is writing a screenplay and writing the prose version of that screenplay. And then with the book being published, then there is the intellectual property, as they say, that the movie can be based on. And then with the screenplay being, you know, kind of the basis for what the book was, the adaptation is very, very close. So, you know, we got really lucky, for instance, with the special and the director of that basically shot the book as we had written it, because the screenplay and the book were so close to each other. And so this was something that James and I did with this. Within the scrape, we have had some great success with the screenplay as a separate thing. We won the top prize at a big film festival in Los Angeles. I think that's 2 years ago now. At Shriekfest, where our screenplay In the Scrape won the top prize. And I had won the top prize there a few years earlier with my script, Jacob's Wife, which was made into a movie by Barbara Crampton a couple of years ago. She produced it and starred in it. So, anyhow, that's part of the process. And a screenplay is obviously less detailed than a prose piece. But that works then well as a kind of outline that says, here's here are what our scenes are like. Here's what some of the dialogue is like. And then the prose version, we get to expand that some and add detail and so forth. But, you know, it makes a great framework for both of us as writers to know what we're doing, where we're going, and all of that. So it's not, I mean, I hear from some other co-writers who say, I write a chapter, send the manuscript, my co-writer writes the next chapter, mm-hmm. sends it back to me, you know, and so we have a very different process from that. We really know what the whole story is before we're, you know, getting into the actual writing of it. So that's helpful to know the destination.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm again, every time I speak to authors who've come in, everyone has their own process. I guess like, if you write by yourself, you know, you have your own process. But unfortunately,
right.
I don't get on awfully well with people. So although having said that, I am actually, this year will be co-writing a novel for the first time with someone else, so I'm looking forward to it with trepidation. I mean, we may never speak again, but it'll be good.
I can't you know, I used to, I guess they call it the difference between, I think some people call it pantsing, right, where they just kind of start writing a story and then they have no idea what the destination is and so forth. And I used to do that. And then I really heard some things about outlining that kind of convinced me that that was the way to go. And I've really been satisfied with that since then. And kind of, you know, the idea was that if you start with the ending and you work your way backwards, then you are creating a different kind of inevitability about where you're going. And endings are tough. You know, endings are the most important thing because that's what you're leaving the audience with. And so, you know, if you don't have a great ending, then I think you're going to be, you know, doing yourself a disservice. And so, If you could figure out kind of what your story is, or it's maybe a little bit about it, but you can really figure out that ending and you can work your way backwards from that, then you get a great outline and then you know where you're going. And so it really helps, at least for me. Again, as you said, everybody's got their own process. And I know that doesn't work for everybody, but I've had great, feel like I've had a real great success with that kind of thing.
I definitely like that
fantastic
idea.
That's encouraging
ending,
to me.
I mean, have you read a book where it's just amazing up until the end, and then you just feel like, you know, you've been robbed or something, and all the times that's what you're going to remember is that ending. So it's definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I say that, you know, a lot of times if you're doing the pantsing kind of approach and you don't know where you're going, you may end up someplace that is, you know, maybe cliched or is a place that you, you know, didn't really want to go, but that's kind of where the story is headed and so on. And so, you know, as they say, sometimes people don't choose Denny's, they just end up there. And, you know, so that's the way it is with these kinds of endings. And I think if you can really work and figure out how to create a very memorable ending, then that really is a huge part of the battle of storytelling. And I think, you know, if you start with that and go backwards, it's a very different kind of experience.
I absolutely hate to do this, Mark. We are just about out of time for our show. You have to promise to come back. Yeah, you have to promise to come back and see us.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So
hopefully
awesome.
I can get James to come next time too, and we could talk about something else that we're working on. So yeah, that'd be great.
Definitely. And for all of our listeners, go out there and find In the Scrape by Mark Streensland and co-written by James Newman. And also I want to give another shout out to Mark Harrietta. That was a great excerpt. And yeah, I want to read this book now. And thank you so much, Mark. And I can't wait to have you back on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Hey, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, thanks. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, time has. I keep saying we need a longer show. Yeah, I think we need to think about that. Time has beaten us yet again, and it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.